GCET, June 15th.
Okay, whenever you want to start the meeting.
All right, I'm going to start the meeting now. I want to thank everybody, hello, for coming. I first order of business is to approve the minutes of 5:25.
Are they?
All right.
So move.
Okay.
Oh, this was the great one. Second, he was so good.
Okay, we have.
We got to get him for.
Yeah, he's good.
Okay. For a party.
Yeah, for, as you say, for a talent show. Yeah.
For a talent. Oh, he was so good.
Okay. Now, Maria Alvarez, Deputy Director of Statewide Senior Action Council, will present the New York Elder Economic Security Initiative, a multi-year campaign to promote the economic well-being of New York State senior citizens. Maria? Okay.
Good morning. Okay.
Yesterday, Monday at midnight, they finally passed that money that they needed to continue running the state, okay? They still don't have a budget. Most of the county and cities in New York are waiting to know what they're going to get. They can't pass their budgets. It's a mess, an internal mess, okay? My question is, also, before you begin, a lot was taken out of health care, okay, in order to get the money that they needed to for another week. Is it another, each? It's week by week, and they took all this money out of hospitals, nursing homes, and of course this is senior citizen committee. Mm-hmm. And you know, I just feel very bad about it, because what next are they going to take? And you don't know yourself, okay? And whether it's education or anything else. So we have a very, very bad set of circumstances that we're working with now. And hopefully we get out of this, mm-hmm. but at what cost?
Right.
Thank you.
Should I begin? Okay, well, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, I would like to comment on what you're saying, since it's the latest. You know, it's so funny. I come to these meetings, and I have to see what happens in the newspaper literally that day, because this changes from day to day.
That's right.
One good thing that we have some good news for aging, which was that in last week's extender, Senator Diaz, who's the commissioner, he's the chairman on aging for the Senate, he said that he would not do anything unless they put back in the money for the congregate service and ISAP and everything for seniors, for the senior services. So senior services was restored last week in the budget. Our patients' rights hotline for statewide, which is the hotline where everybody calls to get information, we got restored also, so we're very happy with that. So this week what's happening is that they cut the mental health services and for addicts also, substance abuse services, that was cut. So, and we still don't have everything, you know, like you're saying, education and all of the other, you know, there are a lot of things that affect seniors outside of the budget for aging. You know, the health care, the transportation, you know, we have all of these things going on, so that's what's in the those are the next battles to be fought. And so, it's timely then that we start with the Elder Index, because what it is we were able to calculate the cost of living, the average cost of living for seniors per county. So, as opposed to the federal poverty level, you know, which basically the federal poverty level says, it assumes that everybody pays a third in housing, a third, you know, of their income. It's like automatically you spend a third of your income on housing. Automatically a third of your income goes to food. And And it also assumes that the same standard of living is true whether you live in Macon, Georgia, or whether you live in New York City or in Westchester County. We know that that's not the case, and I'm sure you know that that's not the case, that you probably have a lot of relatives or family from other areas of the United States, and even in New York State, where it costs different, you know, the costs are different to be able, and the realities are different, to live every day and to stay in the community. So what we've done is we joined with the Wider Opportunity on Women, and we're one of 12 states. This is, you know, we just got this launched our tool for the last since April 20th, but we were the 12th state. They're going to continue doing this throughout the states. And what it is a tool just so that we could see what the cost of living is, the average cost of living. And again, it's a beginning, and it's not, you might say, some person might say, oh, I pay a lot more to live in where I do. Some people might say it doesn't cost that much, but it, just keep in mind it's an average, and it's very conservative. And we're going to go through it, and I want to show you the different uses that it could be done, that it could be used. I've presented this to a lot of other people, and, you know, I've presented it to offices on aging, I've presented it to seniors, to providers, to senior centers, to, you know, healthcare managers, and everybody comes up with another use for what this could be. And that's exactly what we want. We want people to take this information, distribute it as widely as possible. You know, you're free to copy, make copies, share it, do whatever you want with it, because what we need is for people to be able to use this for whatever they need. It could be written, you know, for writing proposals, for planning. Maybe you know of something who wants to, somebody who wants to retire. They could say, oh, well, let me see how much it costs to retire in my county, more or less. So things like that. Anyway, and as advocates, we also put together a policy brief, because these figures show the you know, that without all of those services and programs that we rely on for seniors to stay in the community, they're not going to make it. Okay? So let's start with, if we look, this is the research report. You see it says research report.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and that's the other thing I wanted to say. So this is not a poverty report, you know. Because a lot of people were asking me, well, how does this differentiate from poverty reports that come out for the state or for the federal government? This is an economic security report. We want to make sure that seniors are able to stay in the community. We know that there are a lot of needs, but so that's something that we know. But we want to know exactly how much, on average, it would cost for a senior to be able to be secure. And security, that's a very broad term, you know. In fact, I was sharing this the other day, and somebody said, well, to me, security means that I can go on a cruise, I can go out to dinner whenever I felt like it. You know, yeah, but it depends on what people's lifestyles are. But this is just basically what can keep somebody living in the community. So,
Can I just ask you a question?
Sure.
Okay, now, with what's happening now, the economics of it, us losing sales tax, us losing mortgage tax, we have the rent guidelines here meeting now, the rents, what's going up, you know, it's going to be a big battle now. I'm thinking of people in assisted living, because we visit a lot of those people, okay, and what bothers me is they take you, okay, you sold your house, you got money, you got this, you know, in the bank, and then everything is okay. They take it every month out of it, and you're there with people and enjoying it. If things are getting worse and worse, these people are then sent out of those assisted living, whether it's in New Rochelle, Yonkers, Manhattan, they you can't afford to pay anymore, out, goodbye. And so they've been there 5 years or 10 years, you know, they have maybe another 5 or 10 years to go. What happens to these people?
Right. Okay, you know what? So in that case, there's a single page here. I'm going to ask you to look at it just to confirm your point. It says, it's table D60, and it says Westchester, numbers go Westchester. It's just a single page.
I got it. Do you have it?
So you'll see here that what we have done is we have calculated. Does everyone have it? Everyone has this page? It's a single page? What we've calculated, for example, is housing. We've calculated what the average cost of housing would be, including utilities, taxes, insurance, food. And food doesn't mean you're going out to dinner. Food means you're eating at home. You're buying in your local supermarket and eating at home. Transportation, health care, and that's if you're in good health, meaning you don't need any assistance. And then miscellaneous is just a capital for toiletries or things like that. So, and then we calculated it whether the person was single or they're a couple, whether you're an owner, you own your home outright, whether you're a renter with one bedroom, or whether you're an owner with a mortgage. So you'll see that, you know, you'll see what it ends up to, the index per month and then per year, basically. So we added up all of those expenses. So in Westchester County, a homeowner without a mortgage would cost them $27,348. Renter with one bedroom was $31,284, and the person that pays the most is a person that has a mortgage, which would need $42,732 a year just to live in the community and to stay in their home. Now, if we look at the next table, you'll see that there's a federal poverty guideline. In 2009, the federal poverty guideline was $10,830. So, and then SSI payments in Westchester County on the average was, I know, in the maximum is 2000, and in 2009 was 8,688. And at the average county Social Security benefit per year was $16,291 for a single person. So now we know that in New York State, a quarter of seniors or people who rely on Social Security, that's the only income they have. So if you are 25% of Westchester, let's say 20% of seniors living on $16,291, when you need to, let's say you rent and it costs you $31,284, how do you get by, right? So I will go to the policy brief and I'm going to show you. You have policy brief here, it says policy brief. And I'll tell you to go to page 11%. And this is just an example, but let's go to page 9. This says Sullivan County, but just so that you can get the idea. So they start out with income security, Social Security, right? The dark one. Mm-hmm. Then let's say they're under that Social Security, that poverty level. They get SSI. Page 9, there's a table right here.
Just there are two of these black ones.
Right, but in the corner you'll see policy research and policy brief, or research report and policy brief.
And you want
policy brief.
Policy brief, thank you.
If you go to page 9, this is just an example, because this is for Sullivan County, but this is something that you can to show you how you're going to get up to that threshold. Then you might get food stamps, let's say, or some type of nutrition program. Brings you up a little bit more. Then you get some type of prescription drug medication, coverage, the next one. Then some type of medical coverage, right? And then energy, let's say you get heat. And then housing. So somebody who, now, right? So that's how they can make from where they are all the way up to be able to live, you know, in the community at that level. So, what would happen if, for example, when we're always advocating about these programs and benefits. Let's say they cut HEAP. Let's say they cut, you know, the food stamps. Sometimes seniors, and now there's, I know there's a big push for seniors who need it to get on nutrition programs like SNAP and the food stamp program, because sometimes they'll say, oh, well, there's a stigma, or I don't want it, it's only $10 or whatever. But the reality is that if we don't use those programs, if people who qualify don't use them, they will be eliminated and cut. It's very simple. The SSI program, we know that 50% of the people who qualify don't even apply for it because they don't know that it's available. They don't even know it exists, and they don't know and these are usually people who are in marginated communities. Maybe they don't speak English, but they're also the neediest because they don't their levels are very low. Their income levels are very low. Yes.
When you talk about good health, how much it costs? Well, we knowing these people getting older, the people get sick, especially for those 80, 85, and have two or maybe three chronic illness.
Yes.
Then, you know,
that's my next step. I'll get right to you, okay? I just want to thank you, but that's the next step. You're ahead of me. So that is why it's so important to advocate for these programs. Because, for example, you're talking about assisted living, and they're living in a community now, all of a sudden. And you know that the state is always saying how, oh, we want people to live in the community, we shouldn't have them in institutions. So let's put them in institutions, but guess what? How are we going to live in the community if we don't have proper nutrition, if we don't have transportation to get to our doctors? And not even the doctors, the senior center, you know, for socialization. How are we going to, you know, if there's no housing, if there's no heat? So you're taking people out of a safe environment and putting them at risk in the community. Now let's say we're going to stay in the community. Now let's go to the other table, which is what you're talking about. A lot of seniors all of a sudden start getting sick, right? And they might need some assistance. They want to stay in the community, and they probably can because all they need is some help. So how much will that cost? So let's take that renter one bedroom again. Single person, low, which is 6 hours, if they only need 6 hours of home attendant, it will cost them, their income level, it's $7,000, $7,608 is what it costs in a year. So that would bring their income need to $38,892 to live in a community. If it's medium, so if they need 16 hours of care, that would be $20,000 more. Puts them up to $51,000. So these are people who are making, you know, who needed 31,000, who needed how much? Yeah, who needed $31,000, all of a sudden now they need $51,000 to stay in the community. If it's high, if they need 36 hours, comes $70,000. And the other is $73,668. So that's enormous. That's a big jump. And how are people going to be able to afford it? You know, because a lot of these health providers don't provide that type of service. So, and think about this. As expensive as that looks, to keep them in an institution is even more expensive.
Right. Yes.
So can you imagine? You know. So on one hand, we're saying, that's expensive, let's put them in the community, we'll save money. But on the other hand, they're saying, well, we can't give you enough money to subsist in the community. You know, which makes more sense? Yes.
Yeah, but myself, every time we had a meeting in January, I got up there and I said, nursing homes cost X amount of money, okay? Mm-hmm. ICEP, in your house, okay? They save much more money,
yeah.
Okay, much more by using ICEP. From experience, a person that's in their house, whether it's your mother, your father, or somebody that you're taking care of, okay, is kept clean, no bed sores, the bedding is changed constantly, they're changed constantly. I mean, I keep on thinking of my mother. I will never, never forget, okay, about that. Why can't the state government and the federal government see this? They're talking about savings. They're saying we're in trouble. We have no money. We're showing them a way to save money. And, like, you're talking to deaf ears.
Yep. So that's called consumer-directed care, which is something that we support and we've been trying to get. But the thing is that with a tool like this, then you could go straight to your local elected officials, your state officials, your Congress people, and show them this. This is how it affects here. This is not a one global thing throughout New York, because you know how we always fight about New York City and Long Island and upstate and downstate and all that. No, this is right here in this county. And I think this would probably be a lot more effective. Yes.
Actually, I think the numbers seem lower, because you only look at it with the home care. What if a medication costs? Mm-hmm. What if the doctors?
Like I said, this is an average.
Yeah,
so
but I'm averaging, even averaging.
No, but the medication cost on the average is here. Yeah, it might go up once you need health care. But
when you have more care, which means you're in even deeper needs, yeah. Not just, this is, I think, just a big iceberg. If you look at, really do the study, this number maybe is just a tip iceberg. I think this is much more.
Right, you're right. This is a starting point. Like I said at the beginning, this is a starting point. And it's an average, so there's more and there's less, but this is just the average that we were able to get. So, I'm sorry. So it's an average. It's not everybody. And again, it's a starting point. We could do, there are a lot of things in the study that I would like to see differently or more of or less of that, they just didn't do because they want to keep it, from state to state so that we could do something on a national level. But you're right. So, and then when you go further and, if you take the one that has two pages, you'll see the difference of what it costs to live in the different counties. So so you'll see how, and then you can even compare Westchester to it too. But you'll see, for example, in New York City, for that renter one bedroom, it costs $25,000 to live. And their income is lower also, $13,815, people just on Social Security. Yes?
Maria, to the booking point, and you already bought it, you may have already covered that, but at the bottom of table D, it says to add in an additional $720. As just as a way to give you an example of what
right.
an increase would be.
Yeah.
So that's an additional $720 on the existing total right now.
Right, right.
Just to give you an idea.
So, so you're right. So it goes up. Mm-hmm. So so then you'll see that, for example, if you can compare even Westchester, you have your own numbers against what the average is in New York City. In New York City, there's a big gap, so these numbers are kind of funny. But then, we'll see, like, Long Island. These are different places. We selected these to look because so that we could compare different areas, urban, suburban, rural, and, the lower Hudson Valley, it costs $31,000 for that person. And in the north and western, it's $20,000, which is a lot cheaper than me. But then, when you see what their health care, their home attendant costs are, they're a lot higher. So then you think, okay, am I gonna stay here, or if I'm gonna stay here, I need to prepare for my care, because it's gonna be a lot more expensive. Usually in places where it's very rural, there's a lot less competition with companies. so then, you know, things can be more expensive. Okay? So, from the advocate's point of view, what we did was the policy brief, and we selected a few of the issues that we've always been advocating for and how this tool will, you know, impact the issues. You know, we found that housing is the is what people spend most of their money on, and healthcare and medicines. Very, you know, on a monthly budget, that's like the most expensive things that we have found. So what we, you know, what we advocate for is the federal funding, more federal, more affordable housing for seniors. You know, the nutrition programs are so important. I'm not going to go through all of this because you probably would like to go home and read this and, you know, digest it. But again, you could share it with others. And then what you could do is also see how this affects the different programs and the different, you know, situations in which you find yourself every day. Because really living on social, you know, when you think that a quarter of the people live on just on Social Security, and with these figures, it's just incredible. I did want to go back and comment on the whole thing about the budget. There is this, I don't know if you saw the New York Times, and this was sort of hidden away, so a lot of you didn't get this article. But this is an article from the New York Times talking about how the counties and localities, they're proposing that they it's very strange. They want, the state wants the people to, the localities to pay for the pension funds by borrowing from the state pension fund.
Oh, I saw that.
Did you see that?
Yeah, great.
So, I mean, these are,
Thank you.
And this is information that you need to know, because especially now that we're in this budget process and there's an election year coming up, and you know, things happen, and things, you know, decisions can be made today about things that might affect us in 5, 10, 15 years. So it's so important that we realize what, you know, what they want to do. They want to, because the funds are due right now, and they have to be paid, and they're quite expensive. What they're proposing on doing is New York State will lend the counties and municipalities money to pay. So let's say I say, okay, here, have $1 million, so pay me now. But I took it out of the same pot of money that you're going to pay into. So it's like a shell game. You know, there's really not any money. But the thing is that then they'll be it's payable by 2013 with interest. So
8%.
Yeah,
and really, it will cost New York State $1.85 billion.
Real estate point is great. Mm-hmm.
And then what they're saying is that they're banking on the fact that Wall Street might come back in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So then there'll be more money. How wonderful! But the person quoted there is the director of budget, Frank Medna, and I was at a meeting with him a couple of months ago, like in February, when he was saying that by 2014, New York State is going to have a $22 billion deficit. Mm-hmm. You know, right now we have $9.5 billion. But this is the same person saying, oh, well, you know, we should do this and put it, you know, and that's sort of, you know, it reminds me of what past politicians have done. You know, mm-hmm. the Rockefellers, Cuomo used to, you know, they with the Medicaid, he said, okay, we'll take this money from the federal government, we'll borrow it, and then, you know, this money comes due in 5-10 years, and all of a sudden we're in the middle of a budget crisis, and we find out that we have this debt to pay that just gets carried over. So, I mean, I'm just bringing you this because obviously we're in a municipal building, and I'm sure a lot of you, you know, are affected by this, and I thought you should know. So that was the aside that I wanted to do. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about very quickly was about some new developments in Medicare. I don't know if you're aware. I'm sure you're aware. Do you know? I mean, does everyone know about the Medicare, the the new Medigap plans and all of that. Anyway, I brought them just in case. But I just brought information since I haven't seen you in a while. That's why. But there's a there's the new Medigap policies. They're called M&N. And if you should all have two of these. Some of you only took one, but because it shows what it covers from between up until May 31st and then starting June 1st, if you intend on changing your plans, your Medigap plans. And then I also brought something that talks about what to look for when you look for a Medigap policy, because if you know, usually they say if you're happy with your Medigap policy, you can probably keep it, but you have to make sure that that it's going to fit your needs. So it talks about what you should be looking for, what questions to ask your insurance carrier before you make a decision, and then basically starting June 1st, which is what you know just happened. So this just happened. Two new Medigap plans will be sold. These new plans, Plan M and Plan N, will cover the basic gap benefits and some additional benefits. They'll include hospital co-insurance coverage, 365 additional days of full coverage, which is good, full or partial coverage for the 20% co-insurance for doctor's charges and other Part B services, and full or partial coverage for the first three pints of blood you need each year, and full or partial hospice co-insurance to respite care and prescription drugs. So Plan M pays for all of your costs for the basic benefits and also half of the Part A deductible, skilled nursing facility co-insurance, and some of the cost of foreign travel emergencies. So a lot of you travel out of the country. And Plan N will also pay all of your costs for the basic benefits except for $20 co-payments for office visits, $50 for emergency room visits. On the back. Mm-hmm. So, and part of the Part A deductible, the full Part A deductible.
I didn't get that.
So, I mean, for people who actually need that, that's really, you know, it's. I just thought you might like it to get.
Yeah, I don't have one either. Thank you.
Not the one beginning June 1st, not the one.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyone else? So that's that. People who, you know about the donut hole, right? A lot of people, what the donut hole is. So people who have gotten into the donut hole will automatically get the $250 check. Do you know about that?
Go ahead.
Coming?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what your income is?
I don't think so. It's basically
no, I think everybody was
automatically. And it's automatic as long as you've fallen into the donut hole, and it'll be a paper check. It's not going to be electronically. It's not going to go directly to your bank account. Although the address that it will go to will be what they have on record for Social Security. So just be aware of that. So, just make sure that your address that you know if you don't live where your Social Security address comes, that what they have that you. Make sure you know that there's a check coming to that address.
I have a question. Since all Social Security checks will be electronically deposited, a lot of seniors don't have those bank accounts because of the fees involved. Is any move afoot to get these banks to eliminate these fees for keeping checking accounts just to receive your Social Security check?
I think there's a move for, I think starting next year or 2 years from now, that what they're going to do is put Social Security, if you don't have a bank account, they're gonna put it into a card, basically, like an electronic benefits card, and they're just gonna transfer money into that card. So
a debit card.
A debit card. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, really know.
That's what they're trying to do now.
Is it? Is this awful? Is it good for a senior to do it? the seniors always lost things, misplaced something. You know, you cut a corner for some seniors and expenses.
You might forget your PIN number.
Forget it, you know, they're lost, you know, they have no way to pay the money.
In the head and take your card and
with the Medicare, I think this is too many different kind of companies around. And how do you expect seniors to really analyze, to understand it, which plan is good for them? You know, you need a, you know, actually a PhD to understand
to
in order to get the best, you know, the system. You know, how you expect the people with it, older people have a memory loss, you know, you ask them to understand our system.
You are so on point with everything I'm going to say today. There's this other article I got. This is from the Washington Post, that from January, actually from today. Today's Washington Post talks about the rating system for the Medicare Advantage plans. You know, now what they're going to do is change how they rate these plans. And the incentive is that if a company has 4 or 5 stars, they get money. You know, they get a financial incentive to produce a lot of benefits. But when they were talking about how this is going to happen, what they're saying is that it's not equal, because from state to state, from county to county, all of these plans vary, and they don't even offer. You know, so let's say I said I want a 5-star plan. I want the best plan there is, and I'm willing to pay for it even, whatever. If you don't live in a county that, you know, where this applies, you're not getting it. You know, so then the other thing is that, and then they say, well, if you want to find out what's the best thing, you know, you have to go to the Medicare.gov and go on the internet, which is a joke because a lot of seniors are not even online. But that information on their ratings is 2 years old. So we don't even, you know, we don't even know what the, you know. So, you know, so these are very, you know, so, and then the other thing is that now with the cuts, because you know that the Medicare Advantage plans are going to be cut in the healthcare reform, now they're saying, well, a lot of these advantages are not going to be there. A lot of these benefits are not going to be in the plans because these are private companies that rely on their bottom line. So they're not going to provide everything, but you're not going to know it because the information you're getting is going to be 2 years old. Okay? So if you really want a good health coverage, which says here, you should go to, I think it's Texas. Yeah, Florida, Maine, or Texas. That's where the best ones are. Don't move over there. Okay.
What do they say, huh?
No, but it's interesting because they found that only 15% of Medicare Advantage members lives in counties where 4 or 5 state star plans are offered. So, you know. You don't
Well, that's why, because they can afford to do it. They don't have that many seniors.
They do in Florida.
I don't. I mean, they should be.
Well, that's because the overall population in Florida is seniors, and they.
We're talking about health care, the cost of medicine. This Bloomberg News, Business Week report came out last week, June 9th, talks about the discrepancy in prices for medications around the United States. So, you see here. The big thing is, for example, and we're talking about the index, so you see how expensive things are. In Manhattan, New York City, they have the highest Medicare spending on drugs at $2,973 per person, per patient a year. So the average person in Manhattan falls into the donut hole if they don't have their own coverage. While Hudson, Florida has the lowest at $1,854. So this is just incredible, and you know, and then when you're looking at this index, and you see that people really cannot afford to even stay in their community, you know, where are you going to get $3,000 to pay for your medication? And not only that, but you know, how are you supposed to pay for it? And how, you know, a lot of people, what happens is that they don't even sign up for these, for you know, they stop taking their medication, mm-hmm. or they have to see whether or not they're going to eat or whatever. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you have a lot of doctors. I've been going to them lately.
Mm-hmm.
That they really, you're a guinea pig, okay? They really don't know, you know, what's wrong with you, okay? And they don't care. And most of them, like you say, are seniors, okay, 55 plus, okay? And they give you prescriptions. These doctors don't know how much money you have or if you could afford it. $100 a prescription, okay? I mean, and then if that don't work, another prescription. If that don't work, another prescription. Your bills are horrendous, and like you said, either the patient doesn't go back to the doctor or doesn't get the prescription.
Right.
So what good is that?
Mm-hmm. Right. And to that point, and this is important because there's a whole thing on the shingles vaccine. Oh, did
yes,
you see
read
this?
That, yeah.
This is really, really disturbing because what they're saying is that a lot of the doctors don't even offer people shingles vaccines because it's so expensive and it has to come out of your pocket.
I sit on the Westchester County Board of Health, and this has been a big topic about the shingles shot, because here we have something that is effective, but it's so expensive, it's so difficult to transport. The doctors who sit on the Board of Health are saying, said they can't even stock it in their offices because it goes bad so quickly if you don't have people coming in for it.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have this issue of trying to transport the medication back to a physician to give it to you. And they've all been commenting on this.
Yeah.
So it is a widespread problem, given that we have a perfectly good
vaccine
that works.
Right. And it does, and you know, and the thing is that it mostly affects seniors.
Yes.
And it does not pay, you know, through the traditional ways
it's
of
crazy.
Medicare, you know, and the HMOs. So, you know, 100, and a lot of, you know, again, we look at the index, who's going to pay $160 for a vaccine when they think, oh, well, I don't, you know, I'll risk it. But then the effects are horrendous. And, you know, and I don't know why, but I've seen a lot of seniors recently getting the shingles, you know.
I think sometimes it's after taking different medications, because I had them last year, and I had never gotten them before either. And all they gave me was antibiotics for 10 days, and I seem to be fine now, you know.
Oh, boy. It
must be.
Great. No, I know somebody who's yeah. taken her, like, 6 months.
Oh, I know someone on my floor, too, that yeah. took almost a year, and they
yeah.
said, thank God, I was lucky. Maybe it was a minor outbreak.
Thank goodness. Yeah. But then it also speaks to the disparity, you know, just health disparities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who can afford it and who are informed will get that vaccine. People who don't, and you know, maybe the and the doctors don't even tell them to take the medication. So you know, they won't get it. So it's, you know, so in all of this, what we're seeing is that there's almost like two tiers of everything. You know, people who can afford their care will live in Texas. Will get their five star you know, private insurance. While the others, you know, we don't have, and in New York State, I'm curious to know in New York State what our rating is for all. I mean, we have about 50 HMOs that, you know, throughout the entire state, just to make that those decisions becomes daunting. So, you know, and then I gave you some other information about the Medicare health reform, you know, all the latest on it. So you can, and all of this comes out of the Medicare Rights Center because my office is there and they always ask me to share it with everybody. So so that's about it. Do you have any questions?
Anybody?
Yeah.
Just help me stay healthy.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well,
so,
I want to thank you for, yes.
If anybody hasn't signed the sign-in sheet yet, please do before you leave.
Thank you.
And also, I mean, if anybody needs a presentation on the index, you know, if you want me to come, I can.
Do you have a card?
Yes.
Yes.
accessible electronically.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for reminding me. Yes. It's www.wowonline.org, and you'll see it on the, like here where it talks about the if you look at the policy brief, neither one, but it says, talks about the wider opportunity for women. So they have their ad. And then you click on New York State, and then it's all there.
I just want to thank you. All I could say is I hope they pass the state budget soon, and then you could come back and enlighten us on what's happening. I also feel, you know, at this, it's me at this particular time, okay, that the federal government, instead of helping all of the countries that they keep on helping, okay, and have been for years and years and years, should become a United States that cares for the people in the United States, help us more with education, help the states with more money because the system is not working, and help the senior citizens and all the senior services from all of the counties with more money so that people can live the remaining years of their lives without having to worry. From your presentation, you know, also with the average, it makes me very, very upset because we don't have that average. And like the gentleman over there said, it's higher than this. This is only a start. It's only a beginning. But there are so many important things right here in the United States, okay, that we should talk to our representatives, worry about the United States, and forget the foreign countries who have to take care of themselves, because when we need them, they're not there. Thank you.
Well, one of the things is that seniors in New York, especially New York State, seniors will be 20% of the state, of the population of the state, pretty soon. And so the idea is not to cut services. The idea is that they should be accommodating the infrastructure to make sure that you know, all of the needs of seniors are taken into account.
Well, you see what I'm saying to you, that the state is in such bad shape now, it needs more help from the federal government, and we could go back and forth.
Well, you know,
with
you know,
this.
But the thing is that, I mean, you know what, I beg to differ. Because, sure, 10 years ago, we had a surplus in our budget.
Okay.
We've been fighting these same battles every single year. I know, I mean, all of us have been in this. Every year we go up to Albany, and this has been happening, you know.
More than 10 years,
yeah.
Honey.
Oh, I know, yeah. But 10 years ago we had a surplus. Mm-hmm. Did they do anything for us?
When times are good, they spend. Now times are not good.
I don't mind if they spend. They could spend it on us, though.
Well, they're not.
You know? But so now when they say, oh, now we have no money, well, guess what? When you had money, you didn't give it to us either.
Yeah.
So, and money always appears somewhere. Look, they're trying to do this thing with the pension funds, which is laughable, but, you know, They can find, there's corporate welfare, there's a lot of other things that are happening, and for them to try to balance this budget on the back of people and of seniors who've already paid in, who, you know, this is not what people sign up for. Yes.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the problems in this country has been for a very long time that we don't protect our most vulnerable citizens, which are our children and our seniors. And therefore, the money goes into the military, the money goes into all kinds of foreign aid programs, the money goes into anything else but protecting those people who are most vulnerable in our society. And we know that if you educate your children properly, that will pay off in the future.
Yes,
if you maintain your seniors properly, the knowledge that they have can be transmitted to those young people. Countries like China, for instance, who venerate the senior citizens, are doing well today.
But we've always missed the mark there. We deal with all the people in the middle, and we forget about those at either end of the scale, and that's where the problems arise. And when we have money, you're right. In the Clinton era, we had a balanced budget, or right at the end of that, anyway.
We had a surplus.
We had a surplus, exactly. Now, and we didn't spend the money on those people who are most vulnerable. We spend it on other things, because there doesn't seem like, well, children can't lobby for themselves, obviously. Mm-hmm. And seniors, I don't know whether we weren't as active as we should have been in terms of advocating for seniors, but the United States has a history of ignoring those ends of the population.
Well, I think our government takes credit for the amount of money that's being spent on Medicaid. Mm-hmm. But that's all being driven by the insurance company.
Exactly. Right.
So the reality is that you got various industries that control the economy.
Right.
You got the defense, and you got the insurance company.
Okay. Yeah.
They control
yeah.
this country.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, so there is money. Somebody's making money.
Oh, yeah, they're making money.
I mean, and if you look at these HMOs, there's a report, and I didn't bring it with me, but there's a report that shows that the largest insurance companies like WellPoint, Aetna, and all of that, from the first quarter of 2009, if they compared it directly with the first quarter of 2010, their profits were $260 million over.
Daniel Hostage.
Yes.
More than, you know. I mean, so there. The other thing I was going to talk about is the Older Americans Act. You know, it's getting reauthorized this year.
Right.
Now that started out that was authorized the same year as Medicare was authorized.
1965.
Mm-hmm. And now, if you look at how much money they put in that, when you look at what you know, and the Older Americans Act is what funds all the congregate services. These same services that we're always fighting about with Albany, right? When you look at what the money is, you know, it shows that the value of the government is to put it into a business like an HMO. If they put half of that money into congregate services, into the community, people wouldn't need as much of those services because people are better off in their home and in the community. So, and what we found is that all the literature talks about is that they haven't invested any more money in that Older Americans Act in the last 12 years. The only money that's gone in is to make sure that people on Title V maintain the minimum wage. But other than that, for caregiver programs, for nutrition programs, all that, that has stayed flat most of the time. So, and then it's a real shame that we're not doing anything about the Older Americans Act. There's only been two official events. One was in Brooklyn that I hosted, another was in Rochester by a service provider. Mm-hmm. So, you know, New York State, we have to drive this force, and there's nothing, you know, statewide is trying to do things throughout the state. But, you know, it's something that we need to do advocacy about.
Yeah, I was at a meeting with Sabellis,
mm-hmm.
and she pointed out that Older Americans Act programs, community-based programs, are not entitlements. And when you look at the amount of money that's going into entitlements, Medicaid and Medicare, there isn't much left to go into the non-entitled programs. Yet, this is where you get your cost savings in these community-based programs. This is where you get your cost savings. And so, in Washington, we just said, look, we could save you a lot of money if you just took 5% of the Medicaid budget and put it into community-based services. The multiplier effect in terms of what you're saving to be in community-based services.
Mm-hmm.
But I think before Washington responds to a different drummer.
What's
the golden rule? Who has the gold makes the rules, and this is we're being held economic hostage by a few industries.
And now the problem is that new ruling by the Supreme Court that permits HMOs or companies to contribute to the campaigns as if they were people, so they could. You know, that's going to be a big challenge for this next election.
Well, that's the reason why I said join AARP. AARP spent more money than any lobbyist back during the year when they were able to defeat the privatization of Social Security. So join AARP because they lobby for you in terms of not totally privatizing Social Security and other types of benefits for seniors.
Earlier you talked about the cuts for mental health. This is also affecting seniors.
Right.
The seniors
yes.
have a depression.
Yes.
You cut this care. This is one thing. Other things I think that we are missing, the target. The prevention is very important for seniors. When they are still in middle age or just were still
yes.
healthy, the process of aging, you know, can prevent some illness, which, you know, healthcare does not emphasize on that part. If you get healthy, you see doctor less, which I don't see would get them much, you know, effort in there. And they really should cut you know, the waste of some people spend Medicaid money, which I was hospital before, I know.
Okay.
They spend the money, and the length of stay is too long for some patients. They can be discharged. They still stay there because Medicaid money.
Okay.
They don't care. So you, if you want to really open, close some gaps, look at some more important things, can save more money than cut a corner for some for senior programs,
mm-hmm.
which when we, which you know, not senior program, we don't get that much money anyway from county budget, but they're still looking to how to cut for you.
You had, yes.
In relation to drugs for senior
right.
citizens, I have gone to Albany with Bernice on many occasions, and we have lobbied for better prescription drug prices for seniors. It seems like the federal government really does not help the seniors the way they should. They allow the drug companies to lobby extremely high. They allow them to do an awful lot of advertising on television and in magazines. You pick up, or you watch television at night, and you'll see a drug advertised, and it tells you that this is good for you, but if you, there are side effects of this type, but before you take that, see your doctor. Now, why should you have to go through all of that? Your doctor should know what kind of a problem you have and what's good for you.
Right.
Plus the fact that these drug companies do not, it does not cost them as much to make these drugs as what they are charging. My wife was a contracts administrator for a drug company, and she knew that the prices of drugs were very, very minimal as far as the cost of a pill.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do with the prices, they're exorbitant. They make billions of dollars in profit, but that is not passed on to anybody who needs prescription drugs. But our federal government is totally at fault for not enforcing what is going on with these drug companies.
Right.
Because half of the people get kickbacks,
of course.
And that's the whole thing.
Yeah, but that is wrong. And that should be completely obliterated,
mm-hmm.
and should not be allowed.
Yeah, that's, well, that was...
But who's going to stop it?
Nobody.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Seniors have, you know, you have the... New York State, two-thirds of the electorate are seniors. That's why I'm always flabbergasted when I find out that they're even thinking of touching, you know, 1 cent on the aging services dollars. Because all of you vote.
You know, I was speaking to a senior who called me this weekend to thank me for some advice I had given. And I suggested that she talk to the pharmacist. She talked to an insurance carrier to find out what alternative medications her doctor could write prescriptions for, other than the ones he was writing prescriptions for. And so she got medications that were costing, prescriptions that were costing $100, $59. She got all her prescriptions down to about $15. You know, now the doctor, like you said before, the doctor doesn't ask you whether or not you can afford to pay $100 for one prescription,
right.
$60 for another.
Right.
But the pharmacist and your insurance carrier, you just have to go out and ask. The information, just ask them. They'll be glad to go ahead and recommend. They can't write the prescriptions for you, but they can. You can take it to your doctor and say, my pharmacist, my insurance company recommends that I could save money if you would
right.
write these prescriptions instead of the ones you've been prescribing for me.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Yes.
I also just wanted to add a comment to the gentleman's remark about prevention. And you're right. Prevention is, you know, it saves money in the long run. under the American Recovery and American Reinvestment Act, there's $27 million that's being funneled through the system through the Administration on Aging to look at evidence-based prevention and wellness programs moving forward. So there is research underway right now to look at how prevention programs can really help, particularly with chronic diseases.
Especially now the baby boomers are starting to age in. So that's something.
They've been on
that.
On the one hand, they will pay for the studies, and they have the information, they have the answers. But on the other hand, they will cave into the pharmaceutical companies and to the insurance industries.
Yes.
And business will go on the way it has been going.
Yeah, and it will unless the people revolt. They're revolting against taxes. They're going to get fed up with the other thing. I just wonder, you know, from Yonkers, we had a control board, okay, from the state. A control board where you really didn't need any of the politicians, the control board ran your city. Is there a control board from the federal government that can run the state?
Who's going to run the federal government?
Anyway, we have another meeting coming up. I just saw Mike Kaplowitz. I want to thank you again very much. We will be anxious to hear what's in the future. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Okay, I'll second it. And have a very nice summer, everybody. The next scheduled meeting would be the third week in September. Keep it in mind, right?
Yep, we'll send out.
We'll send out.